You're listening to the Elevate Podcast, and I'm your host, Robert Glazer. Join me as I talk to world-class performers about how they build their capacity and reach greater heights in leadership, business, and life, and how you can do the same. Welcome to the Elevate Podcast and another edition of Weekend Conversations. Each week, we'll take a deeper dive into an article or interview shared during the week. And joining me, as always, is Mick, co-producer of the Elevate Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about yesterday's Friday Forward, which was titled Mob Rules.
So as you were saying, this post digs into the recent events on several college campuses in the past couple weeks, specifically the establishment of encampments on a few campuses. So as you write in the post, the point of this conversation isn't really to dig into the political reasons behind these actions. Instead, the post is focused on the effects of a bit of a mob mentality that you see in situations like this, and the leadership errors that allowed this type of mob presence to take hold. So I want to start with the idea of mob mentality. How do you think about that concept, and what are some of the dangers of it in your mind?
Yeah, and I think, it's important to rewind the tape a little bit, particularly at Columbia, in terms of how we got here. So Columbia has had a fair amount of kind of unrest and on the campus over the last few months. And Columbia also has a history of sort of campus protest and anti-war and social justice era. So it's part of the culture. Columbia also has rule books and codes of conducts and values and things for how they treat students. And I think one thing that's happened that sort of preceded this over the last couple months, since October, is increasingly people have kind of openly violated those rules and things around safety or intimidation or groups or, getting a permit for what you're going to do. And Columbia kind of consistently has looked the other way at these things, or sort of was like, yeah, kind of, or we're going to give you like three warnings. eventually, I think that behavior was sort of noticed. And again, kind of these encampments have formed and people just started taking over part of the campus in the last couple weeks, which is private property and including both students and non-students alike who kind of are on that private property. And look, there's a strong history of civil disobedience in this country and, causes that required, people kind of getting kind of angry about. But again, without diving into it, there are a lot of things about this that is a little different, particularly, again, what Columbia's actual role in this is. But these groups have formed, and what you see, particularly amongst youth, where there is a lot of social contagion, is that when people start to get together in these things, they start to they kind of embrace groupthink, intimidation, the social contagion kind of kicks in, and people kind of join in without even realizing, what they're joining. And again, the larger context here is, I think some version of this happens in all organizations where people don't like an answer or they don't like the process. And so they kind of decide they're going to, take over. And it presents complicated challenges for leadership.
So I think it's a really complicated piece of the puzzle, and the danger of when protests turn into extremely large mobs of people. It's really, really difficult to parse out the intentions and to monitor the behavior of everyone involved in a group of this size. And so that's why, and you can see this in the videos that are linked in the post, there are a lot of people who are involved in these demonstrations who are very interested in peace, very well-meaning. But there have also been some cases where well-meaning demonstrations can attract outside agitators. And there can often be cases where the megaphone lands in the hands of people who, whatever issue they're talking about, they might not be interested in having a respectful conversation about it. There can be sometimes fomenting of violence or violent rhetoric. There can sometimes be instances where people are encouraged to intimidate people who don't agree with the group. What do you think of this idea that part of the problem is that once something gets to a certain size, and as a leader, if you allow something to get to a certain size, it can just be really difficult to make sure that the demonstration or protest remains productive, remains helpful, and remains unified in its message.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? 2 years ago, I bought a dual suspension mountain bike for the first time, and it pushed me to ride trails that I had never been willing to try before. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has exceptional capability that will have you seeing the possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. The Lexus GX comes with available dynamic sky panorama glass roof, available front row massaging seats, best-in-class towing capacity, available 33-inch all-terrain tires, and available multi-terrain select. I've seen the new Lexus GX popping up all around my town, and not only does it have the capabilities to take you to new places on and off the road, but it's a great-looking car. The new Lexus GX is ready to raise the bar for you. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Hey, Elevate listeners. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify is the partner you need to keep the cash register ringing for your e-commerce business. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading platforms. I advise a lot of companies in the e-commerce space, and almost all of them have migrated to Shopify. And as a buyer, what I love about buying from Shopify-enabled sites is that they already know who I am, and I don't have to create a new account or enter all my payment info. The ShopPay service makes it faster and easier to buy, which surely helps with conversions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/elevate. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/elevate now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/elevate.
Yeah, look, what is a protest? A protest is you're asking for something, you know, and sometimes it's a unilateral demand, which it is in a lot of these things, which could be for totally unreasonable things. And you don't like the normal set of rules and checks and balances, so you take this off. But as you said, as it snowballs, look, I am very in the middle. Don't believe the side you hear from I that it is a purely peaceful kumbaya and that it is a purely violent manic crowd. Both of those are not true. Seen plenty of people being peaceful, as you said, and maybe, but I've also seen people who don't know why they're there and they're carrying around signs of terrorists who are in jail for killing women and children. Murdered people. I mean, can you imagine someone carrying around a sign of KKK member and not knowing like what it was? So this is what happens when, again, you sort of break down. And I think what's really important is like when organizations set like rules and norms and things, they do this during regular times. And they do this so that you can apply them evenly, you know, without emotion. And again, what's interesting in this case, and I think what has led to a lot of the problems at Columbia is they kind of just look the other way, like at their rules and their values. And we'll give you like a fourth try. Any of us who know that we have kids, you know, a parent, and you sort of say, hey, if you do this, here's the consequence. And they cross that line, and then you keep letting them do that. Like you've lost the control and the narrative. And so, as you said, I think there's some people with good intentions, but then there's opportunists, and then there's people jumping in. And there's a video going around social media yesterday with 5 million views of these two seemingly very smart girls from Columbia being asked why they're in this protest. And they're like, we don't know. And then one asked the other, like, what is it that's going on with Columbia? And maybe we should ask someone. So it's hard to not argue that there's a social contagion impact. And again, these have impacts on the entire organization, right? This is the This is the last week of classes at these schools. Graduation is coming up. People are studying. They're trying to walk around. These things are intentionally disrupting student life. And you know, we have an episode coming up on free speech with the head of that organization. But there's also some complicated nuance around your right to protest and have things. And when does that infringe on someone else's right to go to class and go to sleep and, you know, enjoy the $70,000 that they paid, you know, to be part of that organization as well?
I think that this is a tricky one to parse, because I think that the people who are involved in the protests would say the disruption is kind of the point. And in response to that criticism of infringing on someone's ability to go to class, to study, to get sleep for their finals, stuff like that, they would probably say, well, like, all social movements require some degree of disruption, all that sort of explanation that you'd expect to have.
And the flip side of that is, and again, you know, we'll talk about the Google example. If I don't agree with you, or I don't want to be part of your thing, and again, in a place of class, or again, these are not organizations that are directly involved in a lot of this stuff. There's a whole bunch of cursory things, but at what point do they have a right to not be involved or to not feel, you know, trampled on? I mean, we've heard a lot about safety and, you know, a culture of safetyism. I think that's way overdone, but it seems like we've totally forgotten about all those rules and norms, you know, that have been talked about constantly in this, where it's like, look, I mean, I get to do this, and it doesn't matter how it affects your experience in this company or this school or this organization. So it's a tricky line. And this is why people get paid the big bucks. And let's be honest, leaders at these schools are paid millions of dollars a year, and we should expect them to be good leaders.
And what I think part of the problem is that when there's that vacuum of leadership commitment to resolving an issue, and, you know, to your point, especially with Columbia, these organizations are happening on private property. And, like, regardless of constitutional rights to free speech, to assembly, stuff like that,
which they don't have to, they are not obliged to enforce in private property. They have historically.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, Columbia does, I think it's important to clarify, Columbia does have the power to prevent this type of demonstration from getting out of control. And they can do that without, you know, I'm not saying that they had to call in the NYPD on day one and start, like, having conflicts between law enforcement and protesters, but there was... They have some control here. And I think that the challenge, regardless of what you believe about how much Columbia should exercise that control, is that their inaction has led to situations where people who are part of this protest and people who are either bothered by this protest because it's disrupting their lives, or in a lot of cases, and you mentioned in the piece the number of Jewish students who have left campus early because they feel unsafe because of this, people who feel genuinely unsafe or threatened as a result of this. And those people are left to kind of fend for themselves, which is a really difficult position to be put in. It leads to more toxicity in the dialogue. It can lead to, this hasn't happened at Columbia, fortunately, but it has happened in other cases of protests. It can lead to really serious physical conflict between protesters and people who are agitated by the protesters. And Columbia is, and a lot of other universities like this, I think there needs to be recognition of the fact that they're walking a pretty dangerous line here by letting this accelerate to the extent that it has.
Yeah, and look, again, don't believe, you know, either side that's all in flame, but there are some videos of some pretty disturbing behavior that happens in a mob thing. You know, 100 people repeat after me and hold hands and block this person and do this. And it's kind of, it's creepy, like, when you hear it. And so that, you know, that's groupthink. And that's what happens when these things snowball. But more importantly, I want to get back to the leadership angle on this. Like, there is no doubt that a lot of this behavior openly violates stated policies that Colombia has and has enforced frequently, you know, recently. And look, the students at Columbia University is a school in a city. It has diverse ideological viewpoints. There are hundreds of other colleges with those criteria. Why is this happening more at Columbia and other schools? Because the other schools have kind of said, here's our red lines. And by the way, if they're crossed, here's the actions that we're going to take, and we're taking them. I even heard today that they unsuspended a lot of the kids that they suspended sort of the next day. So it was kind of a fake thing. So that's a real problem, you know, when a leader in an organization says, we have values, we have rules, we have lines. And then if you just totally look the other way on those, your credibility kind of goes up in smoke. So it's not that there's anything unique about the makeup of Columbia. I just have to believe that it's one of the examples where they've kind of lost control because haven't enforced their own rules. And so everyone keeps thinking that they can push further and further. And again, there's things in the past that are good that have come out of that, but you can't also just look at the one time it was good, because there's a lot of stupid things that people do and dangerous things that people do in mobs and groups as well.
So there's a couple of things I want to hone in on. The first one is, I do think that, to your point, when you talk about what other schools have done and the fact that this situation, though there have been a lot of similar demonstrations bubbling up at other colleges, in part inspired by what's happened at Columbia. As you said, I think that it's really important to note that this isn't a conversation of extreme actions. Like the choices are not let students do whatever they want or crack down on them and, you know, crush protests with law enforcement when they crop up. There have been other schools, some schools with similarly very progressive student bodies, who have managed the really fraught conversation over the past 6 months, in part by being really clear that they want free expression, but they're essentially placing guardrails around that to prevent it from getting to a place where people feel threatened by it or feel unsafe or feel extremely disrupted by it.
Right. And those guardrails are their existing rules. You cannot take over spaces. You cannot intimidate people. You can't lock yourself and push yourself in. Like again, rules that they have enforced consistently. So they're not new rules. And I think that's a really important part of that equation, right? Because people talk about the speech part. This isn't really about the speech part anymore. It's more about the actions and behaviors.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. It helps you identify and hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. Case in point, last year I asked the CEO of a major ski resort how he got his job, and he told me that he saw it on LinkedIn and decided to apply. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. The team at LinkedIn is also constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/practical. That's linkedin.com/practical to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And the other important element, when you talked about how there can be dangerous things coming out of mob behavior, is a lot of times, and we see this in online forums and we see this in real forums as well, in a lot of cases, just by the way that we are wired, when people are surrounded by people who are like-minded, extreme behavior kind of tends to win out in the end, because that is what people say to stand out, to get a rise out of people. And sometimes people can be compelled towards those kind of extreme instincts without even really thinking about it.
It's tribalism too. You know, we have Sebastian Younger coming on too. Like, you don't want to get thrown out. So when the person tells you to mindlessly repeat something, which is to hold hands and prohibit another student from walking because of their identity, it's easier to join in than it is to sort of be like, hey, we've crossed a line here, right, with 100 people. And suddenly you're doing something like immoral and illegal when I'm not sure that you meant to.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's also just by nature of the fact, and we see this in all kinds of social movements, political movements, it is very often people who are pushing the envelope and being a little more extreme who captivate people the most and capture their most attention. Like in a smaller or in a more organized protest, you might see someone giving a measured speech on what they want to see happen, what policy changes that they want. But in a case like this, where it's a little larger and there's not too much organization around it, a lot of the people who grab the most attention are the people who will say things that will get an emotional rise out of people. And that's an example of how that echo chamber can create amplifying rhetoric, and in some cases, amplifying extremity of action.
Yeah, and look, this back to the leader. This is the challenge for leadership, you know, and making sure they are listening and are opening channels. But again, making unilateral demands with no compromise that violate existing protocols, like, you can't just accept that as a leader. I mean, I think one of the things we talked about in the post, I think it'd be interesting to sort of compare and contrast what happened at Google, because I think it shows, a few weeks ago, kind of a similar leadership experience. So Google had a similar kind of disruption on its hands. A group of employees mounted a protest that involved occupying office spaces, getting aggressive, and refusing to sort of vacate. And in contrast to Columbia, Google's reaction was pretty swift and decisive. Within, I think, 48 hours, they fired 28 of the employees within a day of the event. And then interestingly, and I think, you know, they followed the firing with a memo that really outlined their position really clearly, their existing position. So I'll read just some excerpts from it, because I know, look, a lot of people may agree or disagree with things that Google has done over the year. Those of you who follow my work, like, I think it's important to talk about things that people do right and not right. It's not that any person or organization is 100% right or wrong, but sometimes they get it right and sometimes they don't. And I think Google did here. And so this was the memo sent to all employees. Behavior like this has no place in our workplace, and we will not tolerate it. It clearly, let me go back. They went to explain what happened and what the behavior was, and that it was, you know, physical and intimidating and a bunch of stuff. Behavior like this has no place in our workplace, and we will not tolerate it. It clearly violates multiple policies that all employees adhere to, including our code of conduct and policy on harassment, discrimination, retaliation, standards of conduct, and workplace concerns. We are a place of business, and every Googler is expected to read our policies and apply them to how they conduct themselves and communicate in the workplace. The overwhelming majority of our employees do the right thing. If you're one of the few who are tempted to think we're going to overlook conduct that violates our policies, think again. The company takes this extremely seriously, and we will continue to apply our longstanding policies to take action against disruptive behavior, up and including termination. You should expect to hear more from leaders and standards of behavior on the discourse in the workplace.
And to the point that you made, it's really worth noting that Google is, I would say, as far as massive conglomerates goes, Google, I think, would consider itself a pretty progressive company. And so I think that this is a case where it's possible that there were people involved in the leadership decision to discipline people for those actions. There probably are people in positions of authority at Google who are sympathetic to the cause that the protesters were pushing for. and just had an issue with the way that it was, the protest was conducted, because as you said, it's in violation of their policies. I guess that kind of relates to the Columbia issue, because I would suspect that a big part of the concern that Columbia and a lot of university leaders at other places have been contending with is they're probably worried about blowback from students, from activists, from faculty. And I think that in a lot of cases, no one totally knows what side of the political issue underneath this is the right side to stand on. And I think that some people, some leaders in that situation feel like it's easier to do nothing. They don't want to seem unsupportive of the cause, and they don't want to create more unrest by cracking down. What do you think is the best way to navigate those types of situations where you have an issue on which you suspect most of your constituents really are divided and that you can't make everyone happy?
Yeah, you're not trying to take, look, your University of Chicago, where the neutrality policy has turned out to be the right way to go. Look, this is, no one needs to pick sides here. What Google clearly said is we've had these rules for a long time and we agreed on these rules and you agreed to these rules. So you just have to apply them equally. Part of the correct criticism of a lot of university, a lot of the folks who are now free speech warriors, was they didn't defend free speech at all in the last 5-10 years when it was things that they didn't agree with. And we'll talk about that on a lot on the episode. So what Google is saying is like, look, there are a lot of social and political issues, and they are a very progressive organization, but we made a decision, particularly after an event 5 or 6 years ago, that this is not what our workplace is going to look like. And you can choose to work here. You can choose to not work here. You can choose to go to Columbia. You can choose not to go to Columbia. But these are our rules, and we apply them evenly. And I think what's gotten organizations into this problem is not applying them evenly. In fact, I actually think a great leader is one who says, look, I personally agree with your cause, but we are just not doing this. The workplace is not a place to tie yourself to doors and bring your politics, and it's threatening, and you do that, then the other person does that, and suddenly we have complete devolvement into chaos at work, and that is not what we are here to do. And so to me, the essence of leadership is just applying your rules equally and applying them when they're uncomfortable to you, because you actually agree with some element of what someone's doing, but you say, look, you're violating the compact that we agreed to, you know, and you know, one of the lines from the Friday Forward, I think, is that like leadership that refuses to enforce its own stated rules and values really has no legitimacy. Like, and I think I think we need to move away from the underlying issues, because this is the real leadership lesson. Can you apply the same things consistently in all situations? And I would tell you that why universities in a ton of trouble right now in their leadership, because they haven't. Because all the free speech warriors were heading up cancel culture 3-4 years ago, you know, and so that people see that and they just feel that is hypocrisy, and it's not good leadership. So again, a lot of people don't like Google. They don't like what they did. But the letter of that note was pretty clear. These are our policies. We're going to enforce them if you think we're not. I've said all along, and I've been saying for months, if a couple of students had just been expelled, like since October, and plenty have done things worthy of expulsion at these schools, I think we would have had a different outcome. People would have been like, oh, like there's the line. And I understand the consequences when it's crossed. But the lines have been shifted so much that now these leaders have really lost control. And if you put this to a company, you lost control of the organization. If Google let people lock themselves to their desks and bring this is like bringing religion to work, and politics is kind of a new religion. This is why we'll have an upcoming episode on this, specifically around how do companies kind of think about this. But like most people don't want this in the workplace. They kind of want to be free to do their job without all these other narratives and things that they have to contend with outside of life. And just like you don't want to, you know, when it's your thing and you feel like you can break all the rules, you don't want someone to break the rules when it's their thing. And so I just think it's even if you want to change the rules, and you want, great, you have that discussion, but you have to have that discussion during peacetime and not wartime, right? When you try to change the rules during the wartime, it's really hard. And I actually think there, I don't remember the incident, but I heard someone talk, there was something that happened about 6 or 7 years at Google. And they basically said, this is not us. We're not going to repeat this. And I think that's when they updated a lot of their rules and policies.
Yeah. And again, it's hard to know for sure, but just given the makeup of the company, given the fact that Google has a pretty progressive employee base, including amongst its leadership, I really would be willing to bet that there were people in decision-making positions and leadership positions at Google who were very sympathetic to the cause that the protest was advancing.
And that's actual leadership. And Google hasn't had another problem. I mean, maybe they will since then. I think people looked and like, oh, like this could cost me my job. Like, is that worth it? See, I would argue you should go work elsewhere. If you don't agree with those policies or you don't agree with it, then like go work elsewhere. Don't necessarily disrupt the entire work environment for everyone else, right? And that's what Google is trying to protect.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I think to put a bow on this conversation, I actually want to connect it to a previous Friday Forward that talks about your interview with Ed Bastian, who's CEO of Delta Airlines, and the idea that no decision is a decision. I think that this is a really clear example of the fact that avoiding taking action in the moment, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it is painful, it just limits your options and makes those choices more painful in the future. And suddenly you're in a position where, while it was understandable to not take a firm stance on something early on or to make a firm decision, none of the leaders who were agonizing over what to do over campus demonstrations 6 months ago, none of them are in any better position now. They are in a much worse position. And I'm not going to pretend like I know what the exact right thing to do was. I mean, I think if I did, I would be a college president.
There are going to be some openings if you're interested.
Well, I mean, my point is I'm not qualified for that, but
I don't know.
But this is a pretty clear illustration of the fact that if you put off decisions or actions, you don't gain optionality from that. You often lose it until you're presented with a really tough situation to navigate.
Yeah. Look, that was my biggest takeaway from the conversation with Ed as well, was that thing about, basically it was about crisis management and decision. And the sooner you make the decision, the better. Right. He said, not making a decision is a decision. And again, you have fewer and fewer options. So trying to enforce, and Columbia is a case study in this, right? So now, when you have for lack of a better word, a mob or whatever it is, kind of totally taken inside and outside your campus, it's really hard to enforce your basic rules. and it requires the police to do it, because now there's 1,000, people kind of all luck there. 6 months ago, when you suspend a group and they come back and they're suspended and you do it again and you don't act on that and you had acted on them, like, it would have been a much easier decision. So I think his advice on that is really right. And I have never found in my entire life, particularly around people decisions, where trying to put them off because of the avoidance of pain has actually created less pain or emotion. It's almost always created a more difficult situation. And frankly, if you parachuted me in or you in to Columbia or some of these situations right now, I don't think we could do any better. Like, I think it's devolved to a point where it's just out of control, and it probably has to bottom out, before it gets better. I don't think I could do a better job right now. The situation's totally out of control, and so now everyone's unreasonable. I think that The real learning is like why it got there, and how do you avoid that in the future? And again, for leaders listening to this in their organizations, and you know, you don't tend to have like mob uprisings in your organizations as often, but you do have these issues where you need to listen to people. But there's also just some people that want to not listen to and not follow the values and not follow the rules. And unfortunately, some organizations reward that. Then people see that behavior is rewarded, and then they start acting like that. And then you've totally lost the narrative, and you've lost control. And you've lost the sort of moral high ground of saying, you know, if you have a no jerks rule, but then you have, a jerk, problem, and everyone knows you've tolerated it, like you kind of lose that. And maybe that shouldn't have been the thing in the first place. But the point of coming up with these things before you have a problem is to make it easier to implement ostensibly, right? It's really hard to come up with, because right now at some of these schools, if they said, well, you have free speech, but you can't protest unless you said these, with these phrases, then it sounds like you're kind of rewriting the rules in the middle of the thing. I think what, if I could stress anything here around Columbia and Google and the schools that we're not hearing because things are respectful and there's protesting and free speech, but it's that they enforce the rules that they already had in place.
Yeah, and they created an environment they created a more positive environment and put some guardrails in place, I suppose. So moving to the quote of the week, it's from James Madison. In all very numerous assemblies of whatever character composed, passion never fails to wrest the scepter from reason. Why did you choose this quote?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Look, passion is a double-edged sword, right? I think a lot of the great accomplishments of the world and some of the movements have happened because of passion. But I think, again, you bring a bunch of people together, you get riled up, you get passion, and there's a lot of other things that become problematic as well. And people just get swept up into that. And I think we need to, we need to realize that. So I thought, and obviously this probably came of a time of a lot of protests and revolution. So it seemed like Madison had a pretty good look on this from a historical lens.
Yeah, well said. Want to take us out?
So thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to check out the post we discussed today, go to robertglaser.substack.com and look for the post titled Mob Rules. Also, keep your eye out for future edition of Weekend Conversations, which will be in your feed on Saturday mornings. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the show, please follow us or subscribe to the Elevate podcast on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, keep elevating.